Hello and good evening from Yerushalayim Eir Kodesh. Tonight, as we are in Maseches Kisuvos, we will be dealing with ancient shtaros, what we can learn from ancient shtaros, what we have found in ancient shtaros, and how that compares with what we have in Maseches Kisuvos. Now, people in ancient times, and we're talking about the time of the second Beis Hamikdash period in general, a drop before and a drop after, people wrote the shtaros, they wrote them on papyrus, and as such, very few of these documents have survived throughout the ages. Can you imagine when Yerushalayim was destroyed? We know that the official archives went up in flames, so most of the copies of documents were sitting over there. But even if they survived the Churban, the organic material most probably rotted over 2,000 years, and as I said, very little that survived. The only place in Eretz Yisrael where such material survived is in the Dead Sea area, where the climate is very dry. Everyone knows about the famous Dead Sea Scrolls, which were found in Qumran, but Qumran is not the only place where they found scrolls. Qumran warrants a whole shir/lecture in itself to understand the material that's found over there. But in other places nearby, south of Qumran, places by the name of Wadi Murbat, Nachal Chever, Nachal Tse'elim, documents have been found. These are absolutely Jewish documents dating from the time of the second Beis HaMikdash and on until the Bar Kokhba revolt. And these are just a handful of all that existed, but this handful is enough to give us a little insight into what shtaros were like in those days and what we can learn from them. A professor from Hebrew University, a religious professor by the name of Chagam Zgav, was kind enough to send me his doctorate thesis. He's an expert on ancient writings and stuff like that, and all the material. He sums it up. He says, in essence, we can't find a uniform code of how to write a shtar. Chazal don't tell us how to write a shtar. Chazal just give us the requirements, what must exist in a shtar. And around that, people wrote, of course, based on what was necessary, etc. Since we are in Maseches Ksuvos, we're going to start with documents pertaining to Ksuvos. The documents we're going to discuss first is a document found in Nachal Chever. This was found 40 years ago. Some of these documents actually took 40 years to decipher and to publish, but today pretty much everything is available, everything is published. There's a set called DJD, which means Discovery of Judean Desert, which came out in 40 volumes, which covers pretty much all the written material that's been found in the Dead Sea area. So it's all found over there. Of course, you have to go search between the 40 volumes to know what you're looking for, but it's all been published. So we're going to start with this document. Before we get to the document, we're going to review the Mishnah on the Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis. And the Mishnah says like this. The Mishnah, by the way, doesn't give us a standard text for what the Ksuvah should look like. And as we see, the Rambam says, I call Kaminek Medina, everything depends on normal custom. The Mishnah just mentions stuff that are supposed to be in there, and if they're not in there, what's the deal? So the Mishnah says like this. Lo kasev la, the Mishnah goes to a list of things that he's obviously supposed to write in the Ksuvah, and then the Mishnah says, Lo kasev la, b'nin dichrin d'yevel k'minoyi, if he didn't write in the Ksuvah, your male children, that you shall bear to me. Inun yardun kesef suvasayach, they shall inherit the money of the Ksuvah, yes, al chukein demachur. More than the chelek that their brother Shir. Now, this is the concept of Ksuvah b'nin dichrin, which in modern times is really not so relevant because a person doesn't marry two wives, but in ancient times when a person married two wives, so Ksuvah b'nin dichrin. What is Ksuvah b'nin dichrin? When a person marries a woman, he gives her, he writes her certain things in the Ksuvah, and if she passes away in his lifetime, so then when he passes away, the children from that woman, they get their share of the Ksuvah. In other words, the inheritance gets divided up by all his children, share and share alike, even from different wives, except for the Bechor, of course, who gets a double portion. But everyone gets share and share alike. But the children from wife A, let's say Rachel, will get the Ksuvah that will get the money, the Ksuvah that's written in her Ksuvah. The children of wife Leah will get her Ksuvah. So the Mishnah says that if he doesn't write this in the Ksuba, nonetheless, Chayiv, Shutnai Pestim. He's Chayiv to give it, and that was even though it's not written, it's considered his Chayiv anyway, it's a Tnai Pestim. But non Nukvon Dievin Luchiminoi, your female children, that you shall bear me, Yevin Yasun Rebesi, they shall sit in my house. And sustain themselves from my possessions until they get married. If he didn't write this, in other words, he didn't promise what's called mezonos abbas, mezonos for the daughters until they get married, chayv, shutnai pestim. You shall sit in my house. And support yourself from my possessions. As long as you live almona in my house, chayv, shutnai pestim. This was what Anshe Yerushalayim wrote. However, Anshe Golo, he goes from Anshe Yerushalayim. The people of Golo, they would write the same as the people of Yerushalayim. However, Anshe Yehuda, he goes from Anshe Yerushalayim. The Anshe Yehuda would write that she would live in the house until the Yerushalayim would choose to pay her Hoksu. Have the option, have the prerogative of telling her to take the ksuba and leave the house. So this is what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah protects over here the concept of ksuba, the concept of mezonos abbas, the concept of mezonos for the almana, and that the Anshe Yehuda gave the children the option if they wanted to pay off the ksuba, then they could. So we're going to start with a document which was found in Nachal Chever. Nachal Chever is just south of Engedi. And as I said, very few have been found to give us a little insight. The document is written on papyrus. It's written in Aramaic. And this is a very interesting ksuba because we can say it's a very late ksuba in relative to the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. So let's see what this says. We're going to post it on the This is before we start, I'll just show you what the thing actually looks like. And it's this small document over here that was rolled up. And all these documents were Shtar Mekusher, but we will not get into Shtar Mekusher as of yet. If time permitting, we will talk about Shtar Mekusher later. Written on papyrus and ink, and the text of this ksuba. Now, not all of it survived, as you can see from this picture over here. This is the situation of what it looked like. Not all of it survived. That's why these things took years to decipher. Whatever we have, we have. Whatever we don't, we don't. But in the Shtar Mekusher, it does have, it's written twice. In the top part and the bottom part. So, if something is missing in one place, we're able to reconstruct it from the second part. So what do we have over here? On the top line is a date. And every legal document, of course, has a date. It has an implication. I'm sure you're aware. You've been to a chasana. You know that they write the ksuba. And one of the biggest worries in the Masada Kiddushin usually is that if he writes the ksuba, and he writes a date for the, the shkir takes place, the chuppah will take place around sunset, and he writes the date, as the date changes between sunset and Tzeisak HaChavim, if he writes the date, let's say the chuppah is taking place on a Tuesday evening, and the date is for Tuesday, so he's rushing to make the Kiddushin before Shkia, so that the Ksuba should go into effect on the day of the Kiddushin. If not, well, there are ways around it, but in Eretz Yisrael, very often it seems like Kiddushin tried to avoid it. Because if he wrote an early date, in other words, he wrote the date for Tuesday, but the Chosin actually was Mekadosh on Wednesday, so then it's called a Shtar Muktam, and it can cause problems. So anyway, every document will have a date. The date over here, part of it is missing. We're going to show documents later where we can see what the date is. Bitlasa Badar, and the third day of Adar. Next lines are missing, but the place, and as I told you, Nachal Chever is near Ein Gedi, and these are people, this document dates to the time of Shimon Bar Kochva, who revolted against the Romans, and when the Romans caught on, the people of Ein Gedi ran away, escaped from Ein Gedi, and took refuge in a place called Nachal Chever nearby, and this woman, by the name of Bafta, took all her archive with her, and that's how we have it today. So it mentions the town of Ein Gedi. The rest is missing, but we can figure out what it said. The next line is, "Is the heaven li into kedas Moshe v'Yudoi." You should be my wife like the kedas Moshe and Yehuda, like as we said today, kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. And he guarantees her v'Yavloch v'Mayer v'Ksubas Alech. Although most of it is missing, but in the end we have the line v'Kimloch alakesef Zuzin arba meyo. And he gives her a ksuba of 400 zuz. Now we have the Mishnah. In the beginning of ksubas, we know that for a psula you write 200 zuz, and for an almana, 100 zuz. And ksubas have your base, the Mishnah says, base in shokanim, how you go with a psula abame zuz. A base in shokanim will go before a psula 400 zuz, below me, chabiyan chachamim, chacham did not protest. And then the Gemara says, amar vidam ashmur lo base in shokanim bilvad. Not only base in shokanim. Even if it's Israel, but it's a miyuchasik family, if they want to do the way that the Kohanim do, meaning to write 400 zuz, so that's their prerogative, and that's the conclusion of the Gemara. Now we will see that this ksuba is not a ksuba of a kohen, and we'll prove that soon, but, of course we don't know, maybe the woman was a bas kohen, so that we have no way of knowing. But it's definitely not a ksuba of a kohen, and we're going to prove that soon. But, he writes here, Kimlelach Kesem Zuzin, Arba Meir, 400 Zuz, the Inun, Mahinun Tzurin Meir, which are 100, a Sela is 4 Zuz, so for 400 Zuz, that comes out 100 Sela Tzurin, which was the going money. Madi Titzba, the Mesav, the Mitzna, Minpana, what you want to take him with your bread, with your food, with your clothing, etc. And Bat Chorin, you are a free woman, or to take the money, again, it mentions the number, again, 400 zuz, slime mea. The Sevian, it repeats this line again. The intishtaboy. And then it continues and says, v'intishtaboy, avarkinach umbeisi menichsi vosvinach lila intu. If you will be taken captive, I will redeem you from my money and bring you back to be my wife. So that's also, I didn't say it in this Mishnah, but it appears in, it appears in another Mishnah. Second, we'll find it right away. And a Mishnah Nun Aleph, Nun Aleph, the din of Prokona, that he has to be poda his wife. So the Mishnah says like this: Lo cost of life, he didn't mind her. Im tishtabaya farkinech. If you be taken prisoner, I shall redeem you, vasminech lili into, and restore you to be my wife. Over Kohenes. And if she is a Kohen, that's the wife of a Kohen, so if she was taken prisoner, he cannot live with her again, he's going to have to divorce her. Nonetheless, Adrinachim Dinosech, he's chayav to redeem her and to bring her back to her original country. So the Mishnah says, chayav with my bestin. So in other words, the difference between a ksuba of a Kohen and Israel is what the status is in case of she was taken prisoner. So in this ksuba over here, we have over here that he says, it mentions the din of a ksuba, Prokona, that, if you'll be taken prisoner, I will redeem you and restore you as my wife. So as I said, obviously we're not talking over here about an Anishas Cohen, we're talking about an Anishas Yisrael, but of course we don't know she could be a Kohenes, and now we have no way of knowing. There are two lines missing over here. Of course, since they're missing, we'll never know what it said, but perhaps it had over here the line of Ksubas Benin Dichrin, which is not here. We shall see it in another Ksuba. But in this Ksuba, it's missing, we have no way of knowing. Then it goes on. Benam nukva teviyasra mebesi umitzinam mebesi. Your daughters shall sit in my house and sustain themselves in the house. Umeza nichzi adzman yisnasra mebalden. Until they will get married. So that's exactly the text that we have in the Mishnah that you're supposed to write. The Mishnah says, if you don't write this, it's a Tanai Bezin anyway. Vimana eihach lebesi. He says, if I die before you, so you shall sit in the house and sustain yourself. And here we have a very interesting line. Until the Yorshim want to give you the Kesef Ksuba. So in other words, we have two minhagim in the Mishnah. One meaning in the Mishnah, minhag of Anshei Yerushalayim and Anshei Golu, in which the husband is machayev the money for the mother almana. The almana can live there forever if she wants. And then you have minhag Anshei Yehuda that if they want, they can pay her off and take a ksuba, and that's it. And here, of course, this ksuba is written in Engedi, and Engedi, of course, is a place in Yehuda. Shouldn't come as any surprise to us that this ksuba mentions the fact that until the Yorshim will want to give you the money of the ksuba. And once they want to do that, they're free. Now we have another very interesting line over here. This is a line that appears in almost every shtar that's been found in the whole area of Nachal Hever, etc., but no parallel to this from Chazal, so we're not exactly sure what this means as far as halachically. But the Dakan basically says, anytime you want, I will change this shtar for you. Change the shtar, we're not exactly sure what that means, but it appears, as I said, in every document. And then he finishes off another line. V'chol nechosai di isli. All the nechosim, all the possessions that I have. V'di ekne, and that I shall buy, achroin v'avron l'ksubasach. They are achrayus for a guarantee for ksuba. Meaning you can take your ksuba from any possessions that I have now, or from any possessions that I'll buy later. And this is clearly, of course, after the days of Shimon ben Shetach. And the Gemara in ksubos, v'afe beis, the Gemara says like this. I'm Rav Yehuda. Bebes of the base. Rav Shana, Yekosim, Vesula, Masayim, Almana, Mona. They would write for Vesula, 200, and for an Almana, Mona. But he must keep it below your nose and Moshe. And they get old and no one wanted to get married. At Shemoshe, Rav Mashedach, Batikin, Kol Nechos, Rav Charon, Ksubasa. And Rav Shem, Rav Mashedach, made a Tekona, that all his possessions, in other words, the Ksuba used to be on a specific piece of land, or a specific metal to land. And then the women didn't want to get married because they were afraid that after he dies, the Yarshim would go and hide it or whatever, and she would have nothing to collect from. So Shimon Shetach made a tekana that he writes that all the nechosim are responsible for the ksuba, and she has the right to be goveid from any possession. And also appears in Gemara Shabbos if you don't learn base Shimon Shetach taking ksuba lisha. So this concept, this ksuba is after Shimon Shetach in a way. It resembles somewhat some of the stuff that we write in the Ksuba today. So this is one document. This is one document, as I said, found in Achal Chever by archaeologist Yigal Yadin, and clearly a Judean Ksuba, as we call it, the minig of Yehuda. Another document, another Ksuba. Found, I assume this one is found in Vadi Murbat. Vadi Murbat is north of Nachal Chever. It's really not so important where exactly these things were found. Again, we all get the basic idea that they're found on the northwestern side of the Dead Sea. In this ksuba, it also has this extra line. It mentions that the daughters can sit in the house and will support themselves until they get married. And then he writes, "Vein ant leves alma tachmekodemai. If you die before me, v'nayich mini your children from me yirtun kesuk sevasach. They will inherit the money of the ksuba." And as we said, that's exactly what it says in the Mishnah in Daf Nun Beis on Beis. They shall inherit the money of the ksuba, and that clearly appears over here on this thing. One more thing with this thing over here, with this document. Of course, a document is only valid if we have Edim, the signatures of the Edim, and the signatures of the Edim over here appear. The name of the person who wrote the ksuba, the name of the woman who is receiving the ksuba is also signed over here, and after that, you have a whole list of the Edim who actually signed who signed the document. As I said, I'm not getting into yet the whole story of Shtaros and Kusharim, which is an issue in itself, but the general idea that we have over here, a valid ksuba with a proper date, with a place. The place is not so important, but we do know that the Gemara says in Baba Masra and Gittin that the people who write the document are supposed to place where the document was written. So we have the name of the place over here. We have the date, although the date in that document was missing. But obviously, clearly, the date was written there. Another document here, again in Aramaic, Ksuba, Veshiva L'Adash Nas, Chod Esrei, the 7th of Adar in the 11th year. We're trying to figure out, it's very hard to say which 11th year, because this document, half of it is missing. So the whole second half is missing. It's really hard to know. But it's clearly another ksuba. And again, he writes, whatever I buy is achroin v'avar in the ksubasech. Whatever I buy is responsible as a guarantee for your ksuba. Again, with the takana of Shimon Meshetach, as we've seen before. So those are three documents that were found in the Dead Sea area. Another place where documents have been found is a very interesting place. And understanding these documents warrants again a lecture in itself. But one document over here is a very interesting ksuba, and this is a place called Elfantini. Elfantini is an island in Upper Egypt. Now, when you look at the map and I say Upper Egypt, so naturally you look on top. You're supposed to look on the bottom, because Upper Egypt is where the Nile flows and flows from south to north. So, Upper Egypt is there on the bottom. At the boundary of ancient Egypt and Kush, there was an island which is called Elfantini. The reason why it's called Elfantini, it sounds like elephant, is correct. The rocks over there are in the shape of a trunk of an elephant. And the name of this island in Aramaic was called Yev, which means elephant. What's very interesting is that this island contained in the Persian period, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, or the end of Golas Bavel, or both, it contained a Jewish garrison of soldiers who were stationed there, on this island. And archaeological excavations on the island uncovered a whole archive of very interesting documents from there. Dozens of documents. If you live in New York, 7 or 8 of them are sitting in the Brooklyn Museum, Eastern Park, on Crown Heights. Very interesting. Well, one of them, at least, is on display when I was there. They had a whole exhibit of it about 15 years ago. I'm not sure. They showed all the documents, etc. Jewish life and ancient... Now, to learn things from this place is very difficult because there are some very strange things there. Suffice it to say that two of the documents are loan documents, Beribis Ktutza, where the person says, I'll pay you such and such interest, which clearly is an Issa Deraisa. I'll leave this with a mission about Metzia, Eloi, and Beloisa, who's Eiran Eloisa, Lava Ribis, Amalva, Valeva, Va'areva, Edim, and the Sefer, they're all in, so the people are Malva money, Beribis Ktutza, so clearly, okay, maybe this was a phenomenon, maybe. It was a very hard desire to lend money not in interest. I'm not judging the people. I'm saying if we want to learn halachos from these documents, it seems that we even had a whole Beis HaMikdash over there with the remark of Karbanos. But as I said, that's a whole thing in itself. But one of the very interesting documents is a ksuba that was found over there. Now, you have to keep in mind, the ksubas I read before are ksubas from... Aksubas from the end of the second Beis HaMikdash or not. But this Ksuba is from the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, going back 400 years plus. So it's going back much, it's of the oldest written documents that we actually have. And it says like this, V'chodesh Tishrei, which is the third year of the Yavash HaMelech, and Yev Habira. Habira can mean like fortification or whatever. Amar Anani ben Chagai. Anani ben Chagai said, "Lizchor ben Meshulam, ani basi alecha beveisi. I came to your beveischa, b'shaalti mimchos akvesi Yoshama achos chol ishus, and I requested your sister Yoshama to marry me. V'nasateli, and you agreed. He ishti v'ani bala. So perhaps, or most probably, the father was not alive." And since the father was not alive, so then the brother is the one to marry. We see this in this week's parsha. The end of this week's parsha, Vaikachas Machal has by Sishmael Achois Levoyos, and Chazal asked, don't we know that the daughter of Yishmael is the sister of Levoyos? To see that Yishmael engaged her, but she got engaged in the days when Yishmael was alive, but then Yishmael died, and Levoyos, the brother, married her off. So that's common, and that also is probably the explanation why Avraham Avinu suggests that they should say to his Sarah should say Achosihi, my sister, because that would make sense. Why he's traveling? He's trying to marry her off, so she's traveling with her brother. Okay, v'nasati elcha asmar achoscha yerusham, and I gave you mohar, Mohar is the money that he pays for the that he pays on his own. We have the concept Habuah Mod Mohar Umatzon in the case of Dino, where Shechem ben Hamor says, "Tell me how much you want, you know, and I'll pay." And then it lists the things that she gave him, that she brought in as Nedunya. Hechnisa li Yoshama Achos Chalavesi. Yoshama, your sister, brought into my house Mizumanim Bechesef, in other words, cash, 22 and an Eishkolim. The Vush Shal Tzemer Chadash, a garment of wool, Orach Sheva Amos, 7 Amos, and 3 Tvachim long, and the width of 4 Amos, and a quarter, which has a certain value. Megaz Tzemer Chadash, Sheishal Arba Amos, with two colors, Levush Chadash, a new garment, a scarf, goes through a whole list over here, a skirt made from linen, a shirt made from linen, and some anu, some have been worn already. Sach hakol, it goes a whole list of mabushim shel tzemer fishim, and it gives a whole list of clothing from wool and or linen. And together, of course, are shatnes. And then it goes through a whole list of klei nechoshes, of copper, copper materials she brought in. A mirror, which is worth 1 shekel, a bowl of nechoshes, a cup of nechoshes, a bottle, sach kol hakelim shel nechoshes, 5, a total of 5 kelim, sach kol hamalbushim klei nechoshes, hamazimonim v'hamoar, and the total of all this that she's bringing in, the garments and the klei nechoshes and everything, comes out to a total of 78 shekalim and 1/8 of a shekel. That's what she's bringing in her ksuba. That's what she's bringing in. And then it continues with a whole list of things, but it doesn't specify what these things are. Kufsa achat ma'alei tamar b'shvil v'shel, a box made from palm leaves for her clothing. A box of goma, of reed, which has precious stones in it, 2 bottles, spoons to carry oil, a wooden box for her jewelry, a pair of sandals, shemen, chofnaim, shnaim, 2 handfuls of oil, 4 handfuls of olive oil, perfume oil, 1 handful, shemen kick, 5. And it just mentions these things. It doesn't mention what these values are, what the value of these things are. It doesn't mention anything. But then it continues, and it says what the conditions are. One day, a nanny will get up and say, "Sanesi sishti Yoshama, I hate my wife Yoshama lo si eli isha. She is no longer my wife. Kesef sina barosha. He's going to have to pay. Kol mashechnisa yitenu. Everything that she brought in is going to have to give her. Mizumaneo, the cash. Malbusha, the clothing. To make kesef karashim shiva shkolim shmona. In other words, the money that we totaled up before, the sum of 78 shkalim and 1/8, all of that, ushar nechosim, yitin lo bevasachas, will give her right away. Should Yoshama hate her husband, and she goes out, so kesef sina barosha v'mara yovat, she's going to lose all the stuff that she brought. V'nyamas ananya, if ananya will die, and he doesn't have any children. So then Yoshama, the wife, she remains in his house and gets whatever was there. So that was the same concept, that she can live in his house. And whoever is going to try and attempt to force Yoshama out of this house, he will pay a special fine. Okay, it goes on and on and on. So in essence, what we have, and at the end we have Eidim. So this is a very interesting document, because one thing that we don't have over here is 200 zuz in a ksuba. It's a marriage contract, but we don't have over here 200 zuz in a ksuba. Now it could be, some opinion, ksuba drabanan, it could be also there's no need to write that, because lo kosav lav, he doesn't write a 200 zuz, so then it obviously goes 200 zuz. That's not necessary to write. All that's necessary to write is the other thing. But what are these all things that are mentioned at the end? The perfume, the oil, and the stuff like that. So, we have papers over here. We have over here the Mishnah in Maseches Kesubos, Daf Samach Vav Amud Beis. So let's take a look at this fascinating Mishnah, and this is probably the answer and the solution to this. Samach Vav Amud Beis. The Mishnah says like this. Paskal Achnisa Alef Dinar, Samach Vav Amud Aleph. If she said she's going to bring in 1,000 dinar, who posek nigma chamesh esrei mona. So he takes upon himself to pay her back, in case of divorce, 1.5 times, because the money can multiply. He'll invest the money, etc. Okay. One. Paskal achnis l'ksafe, Mishnah samach vav on this. If she made a deal that she is going to bring in money, slo anasa shisha dinar. Her selah becomes 6 dinars. In other words, the selah that was 4 becomes 6, that's 1.5%. HaChosan mekabel olav asar dinarim lekupa l'chol mona uman. The Chosan accepts upon himself to pay 10 dinar lekupa for every mona. For every mona that she brought in, he's got to pay 10 dinar for a kupa. The Mishnah doesn't say. Avashimran gamle olam hakol kaminag abadina. There's no set standard, it all goes by the minhag ha-medina. So the Gemara says, my kupa, what is this kupa? Chos v'kavlo v'sar dinam v'kupa, my kupa. Amar Rav Ashi kupa shel besamim. It is for perfume. Meaning, depending on how much money that she brings into him, he has got to spend and buy her perfume. And then the whole question in the Gemara, how does this work? How often does he give it to her? Rashi tells us how they learn. Amar Rav Yudah Marav Maisev Avito Shnagdim Ben Gurion Sheposva Chacham Abama Zivu Mekupa Shel Besama. Her ksuba was so large, the daughter of Nagdim Ben Gurion, who was the very rich man who lived in Yerushalayim at the time of the Churban, as the Gemara tells later, and Gemara and Gittin also, and Amlo Kaktiv, so they're posek 400 zehuvim for Kupa Shel Besamim, and that was based on the amount of the Erksuba, which the Gemara says later on was Elif Alofim Din Rizav Mishel Chamiya Chutz Mishel Aviya, a million golden dinars that she brought in from her father, not including what the Chassan's father paid. Anyway, so we see the concept of a Kupa Shel Besamim. The Kupa Shel Besamim is for whatever she brings in, he's got to bring in proportionately perfume and stuff like that. And in my opinion, no doubt that that's exactly what's happening over here in this Ksuba. Now, it doesn't state that he's bringing the perfume, but clearly it tallied everything up before it got to the issue of the perfume. So the perfume was not included in what she's bringing in. So could be that it's saying that the stuff of the kupa, this is what he has to pay in response to that. How does the Rambam bring these to him? So the Rambam says like this: Perakov Gimel Chasidus Halachidah Minhagas Rabbos Yesh Ben Adunya. There are many customs in the Nedunya, in the dowry. Yesh mekomos shenagul shichtavu b'ksuba ha-Nedunya b'yesh ha-domeh b'shlisha b'chomesh ha-b'mechtza. There's some places where they write in the Nedunya, they increase the value. B'fnei ha-om. K'dei shetei nidunyos ha-mea kigon. For example, the Nedunya is 100, because v'chiz ha-meh v'chamishim. Why? K'dei l'harpas b'fnei ha-om, so that the people who hear it will hear the amount, the sum, and they'll be amazed, well, look how much the person is giving. So in other words, it's a show, but it's not really. However, when she comes to collect, she'll only collect the original source, the original sum. Some places they wrote less. And there's some places where the custom is that the husband will give proportionate to the amount of the dunya a set amount, and always how much proportion, say 10% value for her perfume. In some places the husband adds part of, on his own, he brings in some stuff for her. So the Rambam basically says that everything goes to Minhag HaMedina. I mean, you have a lot of these things here in Maseches Ksubos, but that depends on the Minhag HaMedina. If the Minhag HaMedina is we do it, we do it. If not, not. The basics, of course, 200 zuz, etc., that is prerequisite in that you have no choice. But everything else is depending on minhag ha-medina. V'chein yishapos l'achnas ha-sadeh k'minhag ha-medina. U'k'shetavo ligvos shubos ha-ma'agmin l'amashim shubos ha-k'minhag ha-medina. And when it comes to collecting suba, so you do it in accordance with minhag ha-medina. U'v'chol ha-dvar me'ilu, the Rambam concludes v'chein yotzebeh. Minhag ha-medina iko godolu v'al piv done. And the klal is that in all these things, the minhag ha-medina is what determines how it's done. In other words, it all goes based on the minhag ha-medina, and if this is the minhag ha-medina, it goes, and if not minhag ha-medina, it doesn't go. So a lot of these things that are mentioned over here in the Masechet Ketubos, the Rambam is basically saying, that was the custom then, and then they did it, but by us, it's not the custom, and then it's not done. So that is the stars that we're talking about, that are talking about Ketubos. Let's see if there's anything more before we proceed to some other stars while we're at it. Okay, yes, a couple more very interesting documents on Ksubas that are pertaining. Another legal papyrus from Nachal Chever, and this one is pretty whole. We can pretty much document, we can pretty much understand what it's saying, the entire thing. And it says like this. The beginning is a date, and the date over here mentions Shnas Tlas, the third year of Otokarta Caesar. Tyrannus, Hadrianus, Sebastus, which very well could be none other than Hadrian, Shchik Tamio. And we're talking again Bar Kokhba Revolt. And Bar Kokhba Revolt is in the time of Hadrian. And then it continues, Amin Afrechado, Besrim Va'arba V'tamosh Nas Eser V'chomish V'mechose Glossin. And the 15th year, on the 24th of Tammuz, what exactly the 15th year? Let's not get into it, but it's possible that the 15th year is from when Provincia Arabia was declared a province. But let's not get into that. I may be off by a few years. Anyway, it has the date of the Caesar, and it has the emperor, and it has the date of the Jewish date. In this document, a husband is giving his wife all his possessions as a present. Now, in Jewish law, a woman does not inherit her husband, but the husband, of course, has the prerogative to give it to her as a present. Now, he wants to give it to her as a present. He can give it to her as a present as much as he wants. But, of course, he can give it to her as a present and she'll walk away with it and it belongs to her and not to him. So the issue is to give it in such a way that it should only go into effect after he dies. But after he dies, the Yerushim already inherit it. So you have to do it in such a way that it's a present that goes, begins now, and will complete itself right when the husband dies. And that's a whole sugya in Maseches Bava Basra, in the 8th parak, in the 9th parak, in Yishnochlin, and the 9th parak. But it seems that this is such a type of document. And the person gives away everything he has over here in this document. Houses, gardens, palm trees. Okay, we're in the Jordan Valley and the Dead Sea area, so that makes a lot of sense. Palm trees. And he gives it and he gives it from now as a eternal present. Matanah le'olam. He says now, although later on he says, when he dies, you'll, unless that can mean I give it to you now and later on you'll have the rights. But could be that, again, it's hard to know, but it could be that this covers all the things. It gives a whole list. What's interesting in this document also is that it doesn't only mention dates, but it also mentions Chamisha v'Shaba, Shoh, Palag, Minshar, and Uklas. An hour and a half from 3 hours. Now, it goes into a whole thing of times. Now, I don't know enough in this document. I have to ask someone who can explain more what exactly the text means. But it could be that this is a document that's mentioning hours besides mentioning dates. And that's very interesting because in Maseches Ketubos, we have the issue of two documents that are written on the same day. They both have the same date. It's a present. Now, there's not enough to go around for both people. He gave person A, for one wife, he gave a present. And then the second wife, he gave her a present. They're both on the same date. And there's only one field. So who does it go to? So the din is that they divide it up equal. Even if we know that he gave it to one of them first, it doesn't matter because they both carry the same date. And that's how it is. However, if they wrote hours, if they wrote particularly, specifically the time of the day, so then it goes by the hours. And if one is written 12 at noon and one is written 4 in the afternoon, so then the person 12 at noon, she gets, that's the Ksivus Tana Gimel. Hayotzen Kulam Biyom Echad, Kol HaKodemusa Chavertah from the Shah Chazachso. If they're all written the same day, whoever got the present first, even 1 hour earlier, she gets it. V'kachu Yikosum Yerushalayim Shalos. In Yerushalayim, they would write hours. I mean, not every place do they write hours. And if they didn't write hours, even if we know that one was written before the other, but as long as they carry the same date, so then they have equal rights. How exactly does it work after he gave it to the first one? How can he give it to the second one? And when he gave it to the writer? The Ram says, because as long as, when you write in a shnar, a day, so since you know the day is not over, so that gives you equal rights as any other shnar that's going to be written on that day. That's how the Ram explains it. But anyway, so here we have this document that to some extent mentions hours. Another very interesting line over here, and also appears in Maseches Ksubos, is that when he says you have this present min ka'an vad olam forever, and you can do whatever you want. Ulamebet ben kol tisitzvin. You can do whatever you want. Down to v'nacha you and your children and your yorshim and whoever from the day that he dies at home. V'neder umoma v'isa rishvua lo isa livnai. He says, there's no shvua, not for me, and not for my children, not on you and not on your children. And that's also a text that we have in Maseches Ksubos, also not paper up. The Mishnah says like this, Kosev l'nedo shvua en li alaych, if the husband writes to the woman, I'm not going to make you swear. Now the Mishnah, the Gemara goes into all detail what type of shvua we're talking about, but let's just stick to the Mishnah. Ein echol ashvua. He can't make her swear. In other words, he guaranteed her that whatever she takes, he's not going to make her swear. However, if she died and the children come to be Yoresh, so then he can force them to swear because he didn't absolve them from a shvu. If he writes, I have no shvu or neder on you or on your children, he can't make her swear, nor lo he v'le Yoresheva, lo bar b'shusach. Aval Yosher, mashbiyah also v'shusheva sabar b'shusach. But his children can make her swear or her children swear. However, if he wrote, or if he said, Neder shvua ein li v'lo l'yosha v'lo l'bar m'shusi, alaych v'l'asharech v'lo l'bar m'shusi, if he says, neither me nor my children will have a neder shvua on you or your children, and a chol ashbiyah, he cannot make a swear, lo hu, not he, v'lo yosha, but not his children, v'lo l'bar m'shusi, not people who obtain the possessions, lo also not her, and not Yosher v'lo l'bar m'shusi. So in other words, we see that this was a common standard text, and indeed on this, matana, clearly he adds in at the end. He says, "No shvur, no neder, no isar, nothing. Not me, not my children, not my yoshim, not anyone who comes in my name, not on you, not on your yoshim, not on anyone else who will take from you." So clearly, again, the same text that we see in the Mishnah appears over here. Now, again, these things are not coming to, we're not coming to Paskin Halachas, but it's interesting and sometimes important to see the reality, to see the standard, the Mishnah, how it is discussing a live thing and a common thing. And as we said, there is no standard text. People wrote it the way they felt, but there are certain requirements, certain prerequisites, and that pretty much appear as we've seen over here.